You have found Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle, stories, and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Past episodes of the Authentic Business Adventures program can be found in the podcast link at drawincustomers.com. We are coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Radio Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, entrepreneur, author, speaker, and helpful coach to small business owners across the country. And it turns out in Canada today as well. Today we are welcoming slash preparing to learn from Sarah Graham and Dave Sweet, authors of Skeletons in My Closet, Life Lessons from a Homicide Detective. That's the Unconventional Classroom, Volume 1. So Sarah and Dave, how are you doing today?
Great. Thanks for having us.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for being on here. So I'm excited because you guys wrote a book, I've written a book, and I read your book. And the crazy thing is, Dave, essentially you as a homicide detective and me as an entrepreneur, we essentially have learned many of the same life lessons. And it kind of makes me happy because I feel like you had a harder way to learn those.
Well, yeah, perhaps. I mean, I think it's all relative for sure. But isn't it true that, we all go off to our careers and our jobs and we learn a lot of things that we don't always bring back and write about. But this was an opportunity to do that, I guess. So I'm glad that you saw some parallels in some of the things I've learned versus some of the things you've learned as well.
Oh, huge. It was great. So just for the listeners, what is your day job? I guess I say day job. I don't mean that to be mean. Like authors.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean. Like, what is your typical job? Homicide detective. That alone is intriguing. So can you tell us about that?
Sure. So I still am an active duty member with a large Western Canadian Police Service. And I've been doing that for about a decade now. In homicide specifically. And then okay. Prior to that, though, I was an undercover police officer for about 6 years.
Oh, wow.
And started my career in law enforcement as a patrol officer, which is where everybody sort of essentially starts. And,
sure.
Through experiences and through a little bit of luck, you can kind of end up in the place that I am now. So that's where I've been for the last 10 years.
Nice. And Sarah, what about you? I'm assuming you are not a homicide detective.
No, not even close. I'm an author, writer, also actually work in a school teaching little kids how to read, which is awesome.
Nice.
Freelance writing. I was a traditional knowledge facilitator between oil companies and indigenous communities, and still do a little bit of that work once in a while, which is awesome. And I actually was an archaeologist before that. So a long, windy road to get to helping people tell their stories, actually. And,
sure.
And that's what I did. I helped Dave tell his story. His police memoir.
Nice. So wait, let's back up one step here. You said traditional education facilitator? What did you say?
Traditional knowledge facilitator.
Traditional knowledge facilitator. I got to put that on a business card. That's money. So can you just tell us what that is?
Yeah. So it was my job actually to facilitate studies with indigenous communities and elders and indigenous elders. And basically, for those who wanted to share their knowledge and the stories of the land and their relationship with the land, I just helped them record it. It's actually part of the consultation process up here in Canada. And there's like, there could be weeks of a radio show on that, on just that process and that sort of thing. But I was crazy fortunate, to get into that super rewarding career. It was wonderful. Contentious at times for sure, but it was really, really rewarding.
I imagine.
Go
ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it helped me with my writing and also be able to, it really taught me how to listen and listen, like kind of listen with your whole heart and whole mind, if that makes sense. So
mm-hmm.
I did that a number of years. So when Dave was ready to write a book and when he asked me about writing a book, I felt quite confident that I could help him tell the stories because, like, he's seen a lot and experienced a lot and has been there with people who are experiencing crazy trauma. So we wanted to write that in a meaningful way, and I know my facilitation work actually gave me a lot of skill sets that gave me the tools that I could use, as we wrote this book together.
Sure. Sure. So that's an excellent segue. How did you guys come together to get this book put together and written?
Yeah, so it was probably about 7 or 8 years ago, I started doing some almost consulting type work for some of the local authors in the community.
Okay.
True crime writers and mystery writers and people like that are always interested in being able to speak to a real life person that's doing what they're writing about so that they can write as factually and as accurate as possible. And
sure. Sure. Give some authenticity to it. Sure.
Right. That's right. And so I was often invited, fortunately, to a number of different writing conferences and things of that nature, where I would share some of my experiences and answer questions from the writing community. And Sarah was, of course, part of that community and had attended several of these events. And over that period of time, we got to know each other fairly well. And
I would bug him with cop questions.
Nice.
That's what it was. Dave, what happens? Like, I have a character that I want to do this. Is this feasible? Does this work?
Right.
That sort of thing.
Do they really say stick him up or what? Okay,
yeah,
little stuff like
yeah.
that.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, what do you guys say? Police don't shoot. Like, is that for realsies?
Sure.
And so, yeah, so I was available to sort of answer those questions as they came up. And sort of through that, I've developed my own contacts within the writing community itself, Sarah being one of them. And so when it was time to put pen to paper on sort of an idea that I had, she was the first person I contacted to sort of see what the viability of doing something like this would be.
Yeah.
And look for some input and guidance on it. And she was more willing to help out. So.
Sure. Now, when you say viability, that's interesting, I guess, word to use. Is that to say
right.
that, like, it would sell, or that it was even something that you could put whatever's in your head onto paper or computer screen, whatever? You know what I mean? Like, what was the vitality you were going for? Was to end up with a product or end up with a product that sells, or maybe both?
Right. Well, I mean, I kind of had a clear idea on what I wanted the book to sort of represent, which was some of the lessons and teaching points that a career in law enforcement can give.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't know viability. Was there an interest in that? Would that sort of
was
wet
there an audience? Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Sure.
Would there be an audience for that? Would that wet people's appetites a little bit? And so. And then could I actually pull it off? Could it be pulled off in a way that would become meaningful for people reading the book?
Sure.
And so it was just sort of that initial kind of, what do you think? Is this a good idea or a bad idea from your experience? Would
mm-hmm.
this be something that could sell books or not sell books? The book's intention, I guess, for me, as it's always been, I wanted to have a book so that it would be almost like a business card for myself.
Ah, awesome. Awesome.
You know,
okay.
And search for future opportunities that might come as a result of writing it.
Mm-hmm.
And as an opportunity to kind of move into other things as my career in law enforcement is starting to wind down now.
Sure.
Because you've been an officer for 20 years now.
Yeah.
10 years in homicide, but 20 years total.
Okay. So that alone leads to a bunch of questions. And I can tell you from my opinion, when Sarah first presented this to me, I was like, this seems like a no-brainer. This would be awesome. Because I see, one, you look at the television shows, it seems like if it's not a sitcom, it's a drama about somebody getting hurt or killed or something like that. So that apparently
right.
seems to be right up the alley of what society's looking for. And two, I guess there's a dynamic between citizens, let's call them, and the police force. I don't know if it's the same way in Canada, but in the U.S. it was on a little bit of a thin line. It was a fragile line, let's call it. And so I think people were interested in this. People that weren't necessarily, I hate cops or I love cops, just like they understands for there not to be pure anarchy, we need cops. So,
right.
like, even you hate parking tickets, but realistically, you shouldn't have parked there, man. Like, something like that has to happen. So I think something like this, I was reading through this, and I'm like, you know, it gives the humanity to the police force that a lot of people, I think, have forgotten about.
Well, and that's what, I mean, the intention of the book never from the very beginning, and maybe one of the reasons why I even questioned its sort of viability was in relation to the book doesn't really detail or go into a great amount of depth in terms of blood, guts, and gore.
Fair, totally fair.
I'm not sharing stories that are going to
not gratuitously.
Yeah, gratuitously in any way, shape, or form. We certainly talk about some upsetting things and disturbing cases, but it's the lessons that come as a result of these things, the teaching points that come as a result of these things, and the sort of their application to the real world. See that there is not a lot of difference, actually.
Right. You made an interesting point earlier.
Yeah.
About every job, regardless of what you're doing, is gonna you're gonna have these similar lessons, whether it's homicide detective, entrepreneur, maybe guy flipping burgers. Really, in the end, the life lessons are pretty much universal.
They are, and that was sort of the intention of it, and I'm glad you see it that way. I think that's how we wanted the book to be viewed as
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I've just framed it in a way that maybe some of the stories are a little bit different than what the entrepreneur may have, but the lesson I think is still the same. You know, when it kind of comes through it. So the stories are in there to obviously add some interest to the book and the writing.
And that's also that's your context, that's your frame
that's
of reference.
Sure.
Yeah.
Which we also talk about how our perspective is. We have the perspectives we do because we've lived the lives we have and we're in the circumstances that we are.
Right.
And sometimes, you just got to acknowledge that perspective. But it's also interesting. Like you said, there's so many cop shows on TV, so it is interesting when you actually start talking to somebody who's actually living that life and can comment on it, I guess.
Yeah, I just see from marketing my books, I've learned from people that are their jobs are book marketers, so to speak, that they just pump out books left and right, and they pump them out to what they believe an audience wants, not necessarily what they know or what any passion that they have for any topic. They're just like, people love to hear about pumpkin launchers, so let's write a book about how to make a pumpkin launcher. I have zero interest in launching pumpkins, but I know that those books sell, so let's just roll with it. And so it's interesting from a marketing point of view. Like, I think you got a good topic there.
Yeah, thank you. This was a book that wasn't, it was certainly not written to sort of fit into a particular genre per se.
Sure.
This book really is sort of represents my voice and my feeling about the way the world works.
Mm-hmm.
And Sarah was so amazing being able to articulate some of the things that were in my brain and spit them out on the paper to make them palatable to a wider audience. And so,
sure.
So I totally believed in the project and the messages. And I, like you said, if some people choose to write books because they think they'll sell. But I've only written books that speak to me. Like, that's just how, every writer's got their own path and their own jam with what works for them. But I need to really believe what I'm talking about, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so from the beginning, I really resonated with what Dave wanted to accomplish with the book. And I love opening dialogues, especially between people or groups that don't necessarily talk freely or understand each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw this book as an opportunity to be able to do that in a unique way. Yeah.
And I would just add that, if you were in reading the book, one of the first things we talk about is sort of what the inspiration behind this originally was. And it was really to give a legacy of my written word to my children, to share with them some of the experiences that I went through and some of the things I learned, so they could understand what Dad's been doing for the last 20 years and why they have been latchkey kids and why they have had to put on dinner for themselves on occasion and these types of things. This is an explanation to them, and the sharing of that back to them is almost like a legacy of my word. So the book was sort of written on that personal level to start off with, and then it kind of grew into what it is now.
Sure. No, I just hear Al Pacino from Heat just saying, "We never close. We're open morning, noon, and night."
That's right.
Crime doesn't sleep. So it's interesting. So I want to talk a little bit, you segued a little bit into this, about getting your thoughts, Dave, into essentially Sarah's head so that she could articulate them, get them on paper. That had to be a process in itself.
It really was.
What, like, how does that work? Is it in-person meetings? Is it phone call? Do you just give her scribbled post-it notes, or how does that work?
It kind of was all of those things, actually. There was sort of a collection of ways we did it. A bit of it's trial by error. Originally we sort of had a plan on how we were going to roll it out. It was going to be more of a, I was going to sit and just talk to Sarah and tell her my stories, and she was going to essentially record them down and then write them. But we quickly learned that I lost my voice in that.
Yeah.
Oh.
And so
you mean that figuratively, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and which was also interesting because Dave presents really, really well. Like, I've seen him present a ton of times at different forums and such, and that it's interesting how different mediums require a different approach.
Sure.
So Dave presents really well, but through that presentation, that wasn't how he wanted the written voice to come out. It just the cadence, the nuances weren't translating. So we switched it up.
Yeah, so I began to write the stories and some of the ideas, and together we sort of scripted out some of the lessons together, I guess. And then Sarah would go in and she would put her soft touches and sort of smooth out some of the rough edges of the writing itself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And also make sure that some of the things I was saying didn't come across poorly. Again, like, the intention of this book was never to upset anyone. So it's to be reflective and introspective.
Yeah.
But
Dave's conditioned to being a police officer after 20 years. So
yeah.
Sure.
His concept of, you know, just the way to phrase things and what it was different than mine. So we collaboratively hammered out the way to message stuff for the reader. Because really, this is like when you write a book, it's not about you; it's about the reader.
Right.
Right. You're creating something for the reader to experience.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to do that as mindfully and as authentically as possible.
I think one of the really great takeaways from this, and for anybody that's in your audience is considering writing a book or even doing a memoir, which is, this is essentially what this is on sort of a very unconventional level. But if they're looking to do that, they're not exactly sure how they would want to go about it. If they do decide to find a co-author or somebody to assist them with it,
mm-hmm.
It's really important that they find somebody that is willing to recognize it's still their story that's being told. And I think Sarah was really, really good at that. She always was able to still take a step back and recognize it. She was still telling my story.
Sure.
And so that was a big thing. I would just, again, recommend anybody that's out there looking for an opportunity to write a book with somebody to make sure that they are finding somebody that is willing to sort of take that role on.
Sure.
And not make it as much about their story and always kind of keep the original intention of the book.
Sure. That's fair. That's fair. Yeah. So you raise an interesting point here that I want to touch on. You guys can tell me if I should just back away from this topic.
Yeah, sure.
You guys essentially have a business partnership is what it comes down to. And
yep.
I've been in a couple business partnerships, some good, some not so good. But in every partnership, it's essentially a relationship, there's going to be some challenges. And something like this, where it's essentially a memoir, I mean, that's a personal thing. It's a very personal thing that you're essentially creating to be public, but now you're introducing a partner to help you with that. Can you talk or dance around maybe some of the challenges that you guys have had just from a dealing with each other point of view?
Totally.
Yeah, for sure. I think I'll start, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's important to understand that, again, we kind of go back to that 10 years in homicide, officer for 20 years. I have a bit of a roughness to some of my edges, I guess, so to speak. So
sure.
When I was like looking to identify somebody to help write the book,
mm-hmm.
I was actually looking for the opposite person to me.
Yep.
Because you found the unicorn.
Yeah, that's right. Because I mean, to be honest, if I could have picked somebody that was more in line with me, mm-hmm. the book's voice would have been, or the written voice would be a lot different.
Sure.
And so I had actually purposefully sought out somebody that was uniquely different than me.
Uh-huh.
And,
okay.
So I'm quite conservative, I guess, in a lot of the things that the way I see the world. Sarah, from my impression of her, is a lot more free spirited, and so by virtue of picking somebody that's a lot different than me, in its own right, will introduce, of course, a variety of little nuances and changes that I expected would be there,
mm-hmm.
But they were certainly present. Like, for example, I'm pretty good at if we're to meet at 1 o'clock, that it's right at 1 o'clock,
mm-hmm.
and Sarah might be okay with rolling in about 10 after 1 every once in a while.
I let him know. I text.
She was very good that way.
I text you at 1:05.
But she was just much more sort of free spirited about the process and things of that nature.
Sure.
But I think overall, like we got along really well.
Sure.
Yeah, actually, the writing the book was, and I hope this doesn't sound weird, but writing the book was easy,
right.
Because the writing part flowed so well, because we both, in business, it's, you know how businesses have like a mission statement or a vision statement or just kind of like those core values and concepts that are kind of their guiding principles.
Sure.
You know, like, so whenever you're wondering, like, should I take on this or should we add this service line or this client or whatever, if it's in alignment with your, you know, who you are, then, yeah, that makes sense. And if it's not in alignment, that might need further discussion. So in that same vein, Dave and I both had the same, I guess, value system and drive for this project and delivering these messages authentically and meaningfully. So even when there was friction, like when he'd give me like the raw stuff he'd write, I'll be honest, sometimes it drove me crazy. But I knew that I could also...
This is authentic business adventures, not sugar-coated business adventures, so you're all good.
Fair enough. So, but because we also had that, I guess, that earlier relationship of knowing each other, I guess, kind of more on a peripheral way, we got to the point in the business relationship that we could, like, call each other on any part of the process and whatnot. So with writing, like, there were some things Dave really, really was firm. Like, no, I don't think that's too, you know, I think we can leave that wording the way it is. And there were times when I'm like, okay, yeah, that's cool. And other times I'm like, no, and I would dig in my heels and... which is good because I might be, I guess, more softer than Dave, like more, I guess, the social sciences. But I also have some pretty firm heels to dig in when necessary.
So. Sure.
Yeah, sure. So I think that was good because we both cared, and so we both fought for the best possible product.
Nice.
Does that make sense?
It does, absolutely.
Yeah.
How long did this take from the time that Dave, did Dave call you, Sarah? And, like, from that point... To publishing, how long was that?
So writing it took 18 months, which I don't know for your listeners if that'll sound super fast or super slow, but 18 months, I think, for this type of book is appropriate because it is heavy, and I wasn't used to processing that type of those types of stories and like real stories, right? So I knew I needed to kind of find my feet with processing so that I wouldn't be... So I would keep a solid headspace, basically. And Dave also was kind of opening the vault, so I think 18 months actually was the perfect timing. And then it took us another 12 months to find a publisher, right? So you submit a bunch of queries, query agents, publishers, that sort of thing. So that process was another year. So,
gotcha.
Writing is a long game.
No, it's interesting you say that because the 18 months in regards to is that long or short, I can tell you, if you would have asked me or told me that 5 years ago, I would say, holy cow, did you get 3 books done in 18 months? And now that I've actually written a book that had a lot of words, 18 months, I was like, you know, that's pretty admirable. That's pretty cool. So
yep.
It's and all actually, perspective, right?
It totally
is. And there's a full-time job that's still going on.
Sure. Yep.
I don't, I mean, I certainly know that within my world, I work between 55 and 60 hours of a week.
Sure.
And so this was all done sort of off the corner of the nightstand table at the end of a long day. Sometimes, you know, you'd write for an hour or two.
Sure.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Sarah.
I was just going to add, we also threw in we put out a chat book. We had an author consultant suggest we write a marketing chat book to put out first, kind of as a free giveaway.
Sure.
Yeah. So at live events, we would give away, I guess, a code for a free one. And even though that was only about 10,000 words, it was still another book that we tacked onto this process.
Sure.
So, 18 months to write, but then we like tucked in another book in there. And I can't remember how long that chat book took us.
It didn't take very long. It was
like 2 months?
Yeah, it was only a few weeks, I would say.
Yeah. I think a little bit longer than a few weeks. But see, this is
Let's just call it a month and a half.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Exactly.
So let's talk about the publishing route and finding the publisher and all that jazz. Was that a challenge? I mean, a year seems like a long time to me, but in the end, it wasn't like you just call an agent up and they're like, yeah, that's great. Let's publish it today. So from a timeline point of view, can you just walk us through that?
A year, I would say, is kind of in the middle. Some people land stuff quicker. Some people take like a decade before finding a publisher or agent to work with. So
that seems like a while.
Our biggest challenge actually was that we wrote the book we wanted, which meant it did not fit into tidy boxes to sell to
bookstores.
Sure.
And publishing houses are really, the feedback we received was great, great book. The writing's strong, really cool. Have never seen anything like this, but I can't sell it in a tidy package to a bookstore, so this is a risk, and we don't do that many risks.
Sure. Oh, because they didn't know where to throw it into self-help or drama or wherever they put it. Okay.
Yeah, put it in biography, put it in true crime, put it in self-help. They're like, where does it go? And honestly, it can go in all of them, right? Because it is a police memoir, but the stories are true, right? So true crime as well, and because of the lessons. That has that self-help component. So in that way, it's really unique. And businesses, they have to run efficiently, right? Like, I totally get that. And to be efficient, you have to have boxes that work. And so we ended up going with a small press because she didn't need boxes to tick. She just thought it was a cool project and said, sure.
Sure. So, all right. So, this publisher you chose... The publisher? Did the publisher come to you, or did the agent say this is a publisher?
Oh, no. We went to this publisher, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just tell me about, walk me through the process of working with this publishers, just generally and specific to them. I don't know what they do different than other publishers.
Well, she's small, and it's Mischievous Books. She's small, and so she can be a little bit more agile and, I guess, think outside of the boxes if she wants to, right? So that's cool. So working with her actually was we came to her with an edited book. It wasn't a final edited book, and the publisher is going to want to put her stamp on it anyways.
Sure.
But that was different. But publishing is an interesting and super dynamic industry.
Mm-hmm.
And my first book was out 10 years ago, so I've watched it change like huge.
I bet.
Is ever changing, especially with ebooks and audiobooks and indie stuff and hybrid publishers and traditional, like the whole gamut. It's super dynamic, which means you gotta just kind of be on the balls of your feet, ready to pivot at any time.
Sure.
Anyway, I was comfortable going with her because she was super flexible with timelines, but also she wanted to put it out as soon as possible because she also believed in the book and its messages, and so she put it on the front burner, I guess.
Nice.
Does
she do marketing then for the book, or she gets it in bookstores, or what does she do?
Yeah, she does do she does do marketing. For instance, when we do presentations at different places, because the book is, we're lucky, like, people are digging the book and so asking us to do events and presentations and such. So she'll design our posters for us. And so, and often people will contact her, right, as the publisher to see. So she's kind of the middle person that way. We also have an audiobook out and the ebook. So, like, she made both the print and the ebook and the audiobook available and that sort of thing.
Nice. Okay.
She had a press kit that she had put out early on, and a sort of a media kit that went out locally and was a big part of basically getting us different appearances on radio shows and TV morning shows and things of that nature as well. So she helped drive some of that that traffic to us as well.
Sure. I appreciate you guys waiting until you got traction to come to this great one. So this great show.
Yeah. Well, and she you know, the other great thing is she has her own social media presence online presence. And,
sure.
And so consistently she's been promoting the book through her own website and through her own social media accounts and things of that nature.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, and she just has that added polish. And I know there's it's such a changing industry, and it was just really nice to have somebody with that marketing polish and to have the cool cover, you know, like, and the cool, like, the photo shoot we did, like, all those sorts of, I guess, the fine details.
Sure.
That I really appreciated the care and attention that she took with it. So I guess it's just assembling your team, right? Like, whatever the business and whatever the project, you just assemble your team. To put out the best possible product or thing you can. So
sure.
Yeah.
How long has the book been out?
Since October.
Yeah.
Since October. Okay. So we're talking 6 months, give or take.
Yeah.
Gosh, 6 months already.
I know. Time flies.
Time goes by fast.
So from a sales point of view, is it doing what you expected, or is it still like 6 months isn't a ton of time from a sales point of view? So I guess how is it moving through the market? Is it good? Is it bad? Is it, you hope it was better?
So I think actually, I mean, from my perspective, locally, it's done, you know, for all, by all accounts, it's done extremely well.
Yeah.
Of course, we're now in the process of trying to expand it outside of local markets and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, I would say for a first book, I would be very, very pleased with the number of books that we've sold up until this point. I think it's performing better than most books do.
Yep, and we've gotten really positive feedback from bookstores, and like pleasantly shocked how well it. And I know that sounds silly, but most titles don't fly off the shelf, right? Like
sure.
That's just the reality of the industry. There will be obviously some blockbuster titles, but most don't fly shelves. And we've received really, really extraordinary feedback from our local bookstores and amazing support from them too. So, I think we're pretty lucky that the book has been as well received as it has. And it makes me smile because we put a lot of heart and soul into it. And then when we get sales... As that bullseye expands, right? As those concentric rings expand, that feels pretty good too.
Sure. Nice. So I want to talk a little bit about the title. So it's Skeletons in My Closet, Life Lessons from a Homicide Detective. And then you have Unconventional Classroom in parentheses and then Volume 1. Can you touch on the Unconventional Classroom portion as well as the Volume 1 portion?
Sure. So... it was actually, originally the book was going to be titled The Unconventional Classroom.
Okay.
And it was working with our indie publisher, and deciding that perhaps the Skeletons in My Closet kind of helps explain the book a little bit better to somebody that was picking it up. And so we did do a title change of the book to Skeletons in My Closet. It's a little bit more reflective of... of sort of the content of the book, and that they come from a lot of scars that are sort of developed over a period of time working in policing. So the unconventional classroom part, though, we decided to keep because it's our intention, Sarah's intention and mine, to write several more books under the banner of Unconventional Classroom, which is our sort of our bigger brand.
Okay.
And because when we started writing, we got a website, got the Facebook presence, that sort of thing, right? Got the blog,
sure.
Got that going while the book was still a work in progress, right? Because you build your fan base so that you have that fan base when the book's released, right?
Sure.
So we needed something, and that's actually what, yeah, like Dave said, that was the working title of the book. Totally thought we were going to roll with it. Everything going well, building a fan base, getting lots of hits on the blog, that sort of thing. And then when it came time, like, it was pretty close to the release of the book when you guys were talking about the title, and it was a great change, but then the thought is, well, we branded as Unconventional Classroom, right? So what do you do when you brand in one direction and
sure.
then you shift gears, but for a good reason, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
But we do want to write more books, and so we just decided to use that as an umbrella brand.
There's a speaker series now that, again, it's fairly local, but, we've been delivering the messages of the book to a variety of different community groups and business groups and stuff like that in the city now. And those are also delivered under the banner of Unconventional Classroom,
yeah.
But we're taking a lot of concepts from the book. The book itself, when it was written, it was sort of written on some level of strategy or strategically. Each chapter represents its own almost presentation.
You sure.
know, we delve into a lot of different types of lessons, and each chapter it's sort of designed to be able to be rolled out as a presentation piece to fit different niche type audiences. And so that's what we're seeing now is that I might be doing a presentation on something that we talked about in chapter 6,
yeah,
which deals a lot with influence and things of that nature. And certain groups find that very, very interesting, and so that's become one of our main presentations. So that's what I would say with that.
Sure. Well, that's fair. The book itself, like you say, is very well organized from a chapter perspective, and it's very clear what the individual lesson is for the given story and for the given just information, the words that you have in there. So that was very appreciated as a reader, and it was surprising just for me going in there like, what is this thing, and poking around there like, oh, this is awesome. I can totally see how you can do some presentations on given chapters and given lessons and stuff like that. Super cool.
Actually, we love that feedback because there was a lot of back and forth when we were organizing the book and deciding how will the reader get the most out of these lessons, because some lessons also can apply to different places of the book, right?
Sure.
Some lessons were really straightforward on where it would be best to put them, and others we had quite a bit of dialogue trying to figure out, okay, where best, you know, where will people actually understand, and like, where will this actually resonate the most or the strongest with readers? So,
sure.
Thanks. Actually, we really appreciate that feedback.
Yeah. So one of the things I'm thinking about this, it took 18 months, give or take, to write this thing. But in the end, you guys are still having your day jobs. Dave, yeah. Especially, I guess, as the homicide detective. So, Dave, was there anything that you learned over the course of those 18 months, or you just came across some situation or something that you're like, oh, I'm so putting this in the book, or I just learned something here, or maybe I'm more aware of what you're actually learning?
Yeah, what a great question. To some degree, actually, there is one story in the book that came almost in the 11th hour,
yeah.
That I wanted to include. It came as a result of a really sad case of domestic violence that I had investigated. But for the most part, the majority of the stories are a little bit more dated than right up to the minute. And there's a number of reasons for that.
Sure.
Some of the cases, I sort of prohibited from talking about cases that are in front of the court or before the court,
Sure.
things of that nature, and adding a lot of commentary around those things. And so I have to kind of go a little bit further back in my memory banks. But what I took away from writing the book, and I think what anybody who would be inspired to write a book about their life or about their career, or about something that they're passionate about, is, man, do you ever learn a lot? And we often forget a lot of the things we've learned along the way.
So
by going through this process, boy, it sure opened me up to the reality that, you know, this hasn't just been about serving the community. There has been a lot of personal learning that goes on in this career that I've chosen, but in anybody's career, the things that we come across on a daily basis and what we retain. It surprised me because I actually never wrote this book. I never pulled out a notebook. You know, police officers have these notebooks that they fill out, and
sure.
it helps them sort of remind themselves or remember certain things. This book was not used or was not written from notebooks, and it wasn't written from police databases. This is all comes from what I remember over 20 years.
Okay.
And then kind of putting it all into, you know, to a 200-page book. And again, it goes back to that, geez, I learned a lot.
Sure.
I just learned a lot. So.
Did you ever have a checklist of things that you learned you then try to remember stories to apply to them? Or is this more kind of on the fly, you had a couple ideas and then that?
Yeah, they just kind of build, one built on the next, which builds on the next, which builds on the next. And then you do start to look at things and go, geez, you know, there is a lesson in this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think the book, if for anybody that would pick it up and read it, what I would hope one of the main messages is that we can look at some really terrible things and come to a place of optimism.
Sure.
And actually pull something positive out of a lot of sometimes really tragic circumstances. I mean, that's one of the key themes through this whole entire book. And I really feel like when I start to, even over the last year, year and a half, as I go out and deal with some really tragic things, I do try to find myself sort of in an optimistic mindset when it kind of goes there.
Mm-hmm.
And I can actually share some of that optimism with the families that I'm dealing with now as well.
Sure.
So by writing the book and pulling out lessons and seeing like how certain experiences sort of shaped and molded me to who I am today, I'm now able to actually articulate those things back to family members and stuff like that I'll be dealing with next week.
The victim families, you mean?
Yeah, victim families that I haven't even met yet, but I will at some point.
Sure. Yeah. Interesting.
Homicide's not going away.
Yeah.
No, probably not. No, as long as more than two people exist, I imagine it will still be around, unfortunately. So I want to downshift into something broader, into your family. So Dave, are you married?
No, I'm not.
No, okay. So, but you mentioned you had kids, so I imagine there's that element. And Sarah,
sure.
You're married, right?
Yep.
Okay. So my point there is that you guys have families outside of work and all this jazz. So something like this takes some time, and it probably takes some brain power that you may, not necessarily brain power all the time, but I find that when I do a job, a busy day, even when you get home, your brain just, it's kind of shut down. It kind of gave up for the evening. Did you ever have any burnout like that, or were you had second thoughts about continuing on with the project?
Geez, you know, I would say I certainly didn't. You know, this book, the writing of the book, it kind of came at the right time for me in my life. I was actually, I had been married and you know, like a lot of us, it doesn't always work out. And so when I started writing this book, it actually filled a lot of time for me in the evening.
Oh, sure.
Or maybe not around and things of that nature.
Sure.
For that reason, I don't know that I ever kind of got exhausted or burned out from the idea of it not being completed. I always felt like it would, but it became really meaningful for me because it actually was helping me sort of through my own personal issues that were kind of going on in my own home life, I guess,
sure.
so to speak, to start off with.
Sure.
I don't know, Sarah, did you ever feel burning out?
Actually, for me, it was more a case when I start a project, especially one that I believe in so strongly, like I throw myself into that work. And so for me, I had to be really careful not to burn out and not to also get too, I guess, enmeshed with the heaviness of the content.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I, while crafting those words, those, you know, I guess those raw, rough drafts that Dave, would submit or pass over to me to work on and do my part of the project. It was really hard. Like, some of the stories are really, really traumatic and really sad. And so that I actually found myself, I needed to pace myself so that I could keep going with the project and stay in that good mental space. And there were times where I just needed to, like, put it, like, not work on it this week because I just need to kind of refine my center.
Sure.
So for me, it, I had to find that balance of working and staying in a good headspace. Yeah. So it was more like almost an overzealousness for this project because I so believed in it, but knowing that I needed to honor my pacing to do the best job I could with the content and stay head healthy.
Sure.
One thing I do remember actually kind of going through this process because it all comes from memory. And one memory kind of catapults onto another memory, and it kind of it moves forward that way. But it is actually true. I think I could say this about most people that are in law enforcement, most police officers that I know anyways. We've become very good at sort of storing off really kind of bad things and putting them somewhere else in our brains. And then we don't ever often revisit those things. So going through this process of thinking back and recalling events and stories, there was actually a bit of you'd be surprised how much you forget.
Yeah.
That if you really start to kind of pour back, so there's almost a little bit of you kind of get hit with a lot of memories. You allow them to kind of bubble up to the surface, things that you sort of long forgot about.
Sure.
And then one little detail will remind you of another one and stuff. So there were actually points in time too for myself, like Sarah talks about it being a heavy book to write. There's certainly points in time where, I mean, I even myself was overwhelmed by my own experiences. I guess.
Oh, sure. You're just like, I tucked that deep down in the subcockles of my brain here, so I didn't want to revisit that.
That wasn't going to come back up, and now I'm pulling it back up.
Sure, let's write about it. What could go wrong?
I mean, in my 10 years, I've probably been involved in about 650 investigations of death and homicide. And of those many, I probably remember 15.
Sure.
So where are those other, 500?
Tucked away.
Somewhere, right?
Suppressed where all, right?
Sort forces you to kind of, when I'm writing it, it forced you to kind of go into those other 550 places.
Sure.
I think, too, because of the hours Dave keeps, right, like you guys talked about, like, crime doesn't stop, right,
24-7. Mm-hmm.
The hours that we would communicate on the project would also be random. It certainly wasn't a 9-to-5 kind of working on it.
Sure.
So I also would get texts from Dave that I kind of had to they would, and I'd be like, hey, do you want me to, take a crack at that lead into the next chapter? And he'd be like, yeah, that'd be great. And then one of your, I can't remember any of the exact words, but it was always from a crime scene. And it was just kind of he's just telling me what about his day. Like, yeah, I can't because I'm, working with a dead body or this or that or whatever.
Right.
I have to go to ME or whatever. But when you're, I remember I was making coffee once and I just had to stop because it every time one of those texts came in, it was like, God, our lives are different. And it was it was just jarring. Like, holy crap. Here I am, deciding, do I do a French roast or do I do an espresso? What do I do?
Big life choices.
Yeah, and he's on a stakeout, trying to get a bad guy. So, yeah, just different worlds.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that so when you're working with, like, I guess bringing it back to, like, business partnerships, like, everybody brings their skill sets to the table, right? That's why you team up. Everybody's got strengths and weaknesses where they need to loop in team members, that sort of thing. So this was a project where we definitely learned how to loop in, those who need to. I'm thinking it's actually of calling you when I needed, like, a cop that would say, like, it's fine.
Yeah.
But that's another story, and, yeah, with crime in Calgary.
Sure. What have been some of the challenges that you guys had in putting this book together and getting published that you did not foresee?
I guess I was a little bit deluded. I thought that actually once the book was written that we did a pretty good job on it. Yeah. I thought I was surprised at how stringent some of the larger publishing houses are in terms of how much they really do want apples to apples, oranges to oranges, like, and a book has to absolutely fit within sort of a very narrow genre before they take it on. That was a little bit surprising to me, because one of the things we talk about in the book a lot is that this idea of sort of living life in the gray, you know, that there's no such thing as an absolute.
Sure.
But certain business models and certain publishing houses, there is an absolute when it comes to publishing a book, and that being if it doesn't fit in true crime and it doesn't fit here and it doesn't fit here, we don't know what to do with the book.
Yep.
And coming up with an alternative is just a no.
Yeah.
And so I think one of the biggest challenges I had was thinking that we actually have a pretty good book here, but finding somebody to see its value and take the risk of not being worried about it sort of fitting into a particular genre. There was a local writer in Calgary not that long ago that we did an event with, and you know, he said one of the nicest things, but he said, you know, I don't know what to call this book. He goes, but you got to read it.
Sure.
Because, but for marketing, like, there's taglines, and you use, you know, you got your jingles, your taglines, your blurbs, whatever. And he's like, no, there's just no. Just,
sure.
Like, until a reader actually reads it, then they understand it, then they get it. I'm like, well, how do you tell people that?
Right.
Right. And that, I think that was our biggest challenge, and always has been, and will continue to be. The next book that we sort of have designs on, I think, is going to certainly be able to fit better what a larger publishing house would be maybe looking for. Like, it's going to be a little bit more genre specific.
Sure.
But this book certainly didn't really fit in any kind of particular category.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, the hardest thing or the biggest challenge was sort of going in with this place of, oh yeah, somebody's going to pick this up and it's going to be great. And then realizing that we don't really fit in the bubble that they want us to fit in.
Yeah. Sure.
So that was a big challenge for me.
Well, when you write something new, right, like there's that fine line. You need to have a unique voice and write something new, but not too new so that it'd be too scary and, like,
where do we put this?
Take a risk on it, right?
Sure.
But also, like, I don't know. I guess I knew this book would be solid and resonate, and the feedback we've gotten has been overwhelmingly positive from a really wide range of demographics, from victims' families to even, we actually have gotten fan mail from convicted criminals, which blew my mind, but it was just so moving when word that you wrote and put out for people to, you know, hopefully take some small thing away, and then they share that it's really helping them, like, that's I know it sounds cheesy. That part's priceless. But, if we would have tried to write it to fit somebody else's mold, the book would not – it wouldn't have the heart that it does. So.
But that was also our challenge in the end when it came to marketing the book. And I think that would be
– I think it still is, but now it's got that – because enough people have read it and that word of mouth, right? Like, word of mouth is obviously the best way to
– sure.
To share any product, right?
So it's got a little traction, though.
Yeah.
So, fair. So I got one more question for you guys, because we're running out of time here. So in 30 seconds, can you tell me what is next for Unconventional Classroom?
What's next? We're going to continue to market skeletons in my closet. We're going to try and expand a little bit more outside of the local markets. We're going to continue with our public speaking series, hopefully start to get into some larger conferences and things of that nature that promote specific topics within the book. And then the Unconventional Classroom is hoping to put out a second book in the next year or so, maybe ambitious right now. But that, I think, is really important if you want to keep the momentum of the first book.
Oh, for sure.
Is to certainly write books in almost like a series format. And so
absolutely.
We have a really good idea for it, and I'm really excited about it.
Yeah.
Nice. Nice. Well, I appreciate you guys coming on the radio program for me, or with me, I should say. This has been a blast. So I'm looking forward to reading the next books that you have. In the meantime, Skeletons in My Closet, Life Lessons from a Homicide Detective, can be found on, where can they find books?
I guess the easiest is typically Amazon for print, ebook, or audiobook, but like any of the, any iBooks, iTunes.
Sure, gotcha. Kobo, the typical like book all, places.
Yeah, Kobo, yeah.
Okay.
And also can be ordered through Ingram Spark if you want to order it through your bookseller.
Sure, awesome. This has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle, stories, and triumphant successes of business owners across the land, coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, and Authentic Business Adventures is brought to you by Calls on Call, offering call answering and receptionist services for small businesses across the country, on the web at callsoncall.com. As well as Draw In Customers Business Coaching, offering business coaching services for entrepreneurs in all stages of business. On the web at drawincustomers.com. And of course, The Bold Business Book, a book for the entrepreneur in all of us, available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, as well as our wonderful guests, Sarah Graham and Dave Sweet, authors of Skeletons in My Closet, Life Lessons from a Homicide Detective. So thank you, Sarah and Dave. I really appreciate you guys being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Awesome. Thank you. Find us airing on 103.5 Wednesdays at 1 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m., as well as at sunprairiemediacenter.com. Past episodes can be found morning, noon, and night at the podcast link, found at drawincustomers.com. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next week. I want you to stay awesome. And if you do nothing else, enjoy your business.